This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton, Alex Ferrario, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango joined in studio by Jeremy Rutherford and Alex Ferrario. Gentlemen, my microphone has been playing some tricky games this morning. So if it happens to cut out here and you hear me scream, well, the other microphones will pick it up, probably.
I was going to say, you're pretty good at screaming, so we'll be able to pick it all up from over here.
Can you cut Alex's out for 45 minutes?
45 minutes? How about an hour? Come on, man.
It's so crazy when JR says stuff like that, because he does on a relatively frequent basis, and he's such a sweet guy.
I think it hurts more when JR says it, because he's so nice. It's like, damn, JR, did you really? It's like when that somebody lies to you, and you're like, okay, well, you said that from a place of truth, didn't
right,
you?
Right.
You got to stick the knife in the eye and twist it.
And twist it. Thanks a lot, JR. Appreciate that.
So, you know what? I got to say, though, yesterday, even though, you know, the Cardinals game wasn't great, like, as far as, like, sports days go, it was super badass, because it was baseball when I got home that went almost automatically into the hockey game, and then you had two really good college basketball games on as well. So, like, the sports fan in me was fantastic. Now, everybody at the house was bitching because all that was on was sports all day and all night. But, I mean, I really like it when there are days that line up like that. You
those
know?
Are, I think, this time of the year, and I would say, what, around like October is the other one, when you got football, when you've got playoff baseball, and then the start of hockey. Those are the two areas in sports where I'm like, yeah, I'm on board with this one.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, Donnie, and during the Blues game last night, Alex and I are sitting next to each other in press row and maybe taking a peek at the basketball, seeing what's going on with the basketball.
The focus was on the game, but maybe peeking around.
And like in my basketball bracket, the number one next to my name, and I don't know what that means.
It usually means number one. I don't know what high score means, but I think it's good.
Oh, first place out of 42 people. Okay, I got it. But so,
don't Jeremy is on fire
today.
Don't
act impressed. His pool's only worth like $40. Yeah, it's like, what is this, Jerry? Right? You win $20?
But I will say this. Last night, so when I filled out the bracket, you know, a week ago or whatever, 2 weeks ago, I didn't know what I was doing, right? So I just filled it out. And then you get to a point three or four rounds into it where you're like, okay, well, who did I pick for this game? And I look last night and I picked San Diego State over UConn. What in God's creation? Was I getting secondhand smoke somewhere from somewhere? And Alex looks at me and goes, yeah, that's not going to be good, buddy.
He's rooting for the one game, which the Clemson victory, and he's rooting for it. I'm like, man, that's a really good one, Jared. And then I look at his bracket and he goes, you have UConn losing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, your bracket's screwed. So it doesn't even matter, JR.
Man, I used to, like, when the tournament came, man, I would be locked in.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I would have a good idea as to who I thought would be upsets. Really, since Mizzou has hit the skidder, I don't pay attention like I used to. You know, when there's hope there, then I find myself checking in around the SEC and all those things. But like now, it's depressing.
This is the first year that I think, I'm like a common basketball fan where it's just tough when hockey season to try and keep track of all the college basketball games. This is the first year where I felt like I haven't even watched like more than three games. And, of course, my bracket was like 3 of 16 after the second round. And I'm like, man, what is this? Maybe I need to start doing like my wife does and judge it off of like colors of teams. And be like, I like this color. I like this mascot. Let's put those ahead, because that apparently is where the success comes from.
Unfortunately, Donnie, as I'm showing him that I picked San Diego State over UConn and I'm looking like an idiot, we go, oh, hey, Alex, look, Nathan Walker's fighting. Look at this.
Diversionary tactic.
I need a system at the game to where one person's watching the other game while the one person's watching the hockey, and we either get into a conversation or we turn around at the same time, and then a freaking goal is scored. And I'm like, what just happened? And Jared's like, oh, man, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, I feel like the same sort of thing kind of happens to me when I go to games, because I believe that I am the league leader in going to the bathroom when the Blues score. Like, and being like, oh, man, I cannot wait one more second. I got to run. I got to do it right now. And then legitimately, the second I pull up to that urinal, here comes the offensive zone pressure, and boom. All right, perfect.
So
well, great.
We could say that Donnie's the Carl Gunnarsson of this podcast then.
That's fine.
Boom, boom, Fandango.
Hey, man, I'll take that.
Do they have Curbs or John Kelly piped into the bathroom?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
it's Curbs. I mean, so you hear it, and that's fine, but you're at the game, so you'd like to see it.
And then when it happens, you forget to wash your hands afterwards, because you're like, I got to get back and see it.
No,
he
sir.
Misses another goal while
No, sir, I don't. And as a matter of fact, I might.
We actually, we had the basketball game, of course. We had the Blues game we were watching. The Vegas-Winnipeg game was going on up in the press box last night, so I was keeping track of that one. And on my phone, I had the Jimmy Snuggerud game because we were watching that. So JR and I were watching like four different games at once, and I was like, oh, Vegas is up. Oh, Snuggerud's down. Oh, your Clemson team's up, JR. Oh, wait, no, Nathan Walker just fought? It was a lot last night.
Well, and I forgot because right after the Blues game, I flipped it on the Omaha-Minnesota game.
Yeah.
And the last couple of minutes of that were friggin' nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Were just nuts and a lot of fun to watch. But Snuggerud and Minnesota wins.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll move on to the next round. Guys, come on. Let's let the kid finish off in Minnesota, have a nice rest of his friggin' spring, and we'll see you in the spring again. Or in the fall, right?
I felt bad that I was kind of rooting for Omaha last night, and as a Blues fan, I don't know if you want to say that, but like I want to see Snuggerud.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, if you get bounced in that first round, you're going to be here faster. I know JR's rooting the other side of that one because, man, you would have had to crank out a Snuggerud story this morning.
Which it wouldn't have been last night or this morning, probably, but it would be on Easter, and you got your wife with all these plans, and hey, you're going to be
Easter
off Sunday, right? Well, actually, Omaha beat Minnesota, so Snuggerud's coming. I got to do this story. So.
But I'm with you, though. Like, you want the kid to have success. Now, I think his next matchup is against Boston, which, if I'm not mistaken, that is that Macklin Celebrini's team, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's a tough matchup for the next round for Snuggerud. But, yeah, I mean, you gotta at least root for the kid. And at this point, it's kind of thinking, it's like, man, just go to the Frozen Four so there's no opportunity to bring you over and burn 1 year for one game at the entry level.
You know, I want to ask you guys this, and then we'll go to the Blues here real quick. You know, there's been a minor uproar, I don't know, maybe a bit of a major uproar, depending on where you're listening, about a couple of those games, that the college hockey games that are taking place at the Centene Center this weekend. Mm-hmm. I think specifically there's a North Dakota State and a Michigan State,
yeah,
who each independently draw, like, I think for the Dakota, it's like 15,000 a game.
Right.
For Michigan State, it's like 8, and they're playing at Centene with 2,500 capacity. And I'm not trying to be critical of anybody or anything like that, except for, like, how does that happen? Because wouldn't you know those teams draw like that? Well, I guess you don't, because it's the luck of where the draw goes.
Yeah.
So you could get a team that doesn't draw like that,
mm-hmm,
and that's why you don't put that in the Enterprise Center?
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. One is, you know, in terms of the chronological order of when you know which teams,
yeah,
are going where, but I do know that there was some, you know, moving around parts the day or two before the announcement of who was coming as to who is coming. So I think they do have some control over,
yeah,
it. But I will say this, that, you know, some people within the Blues organization said that the four schools that are here for this weekend, the regional, some return tickets. So it's not like a complete,
right,
situation where people have been shut out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the prices went up, secondary market, that's going to happen all the time. And yes, it is one of the capacity, the arenas with, you know, least capacity in terms of which ones they're playing at.
Right.
It's going to be about 3,100, I'm told, 2,500 seats thereabouts, and then 600 standing rooms. So
yeah,
it's going to be packed. It's going to be fun. You know, are some people going to not make the trip because,
yeah,
they couldn't get in the Centene? I guess it's the case. But the facts are that some tickets were returned, so it's not a situation where you just can't find a ticket anywhere.
Can you imagine how loud that's going to be?
Oh, it's going to be cool. I tell you what, on television, that's going to look awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, because that arena, like JR said, you fit 2,500 into it. But, I mean, it looks bigger than 2,500 people. So when you get all of those in there, and then when you have the standing room only, it's going to be loud, and it's going to look awesome on television. And, I mean, if you're Centene, if you're the Blues, that's what you want, right? You want the views on that to see how big of an ordeal it was. And last weekend, they had the ACHA tournament that was played at Centene. And then next year, they're hosting the Frozen Four, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, you're going to get all of those eyes, the foot traffic, but yeah, I mean, it's going to look awesome on television and for how it's going to sound with all of those people in there.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I knew that Frozen Four next year as well. I got to check that out. I've never, yeah, been to a college hockey game. That's something I absolutely
I told
have
Zimmerman
to
last night, because we had him on intermission, and it's like, man, it's like the Blues had to have been hoping that the luck of the draw would have fallen on Jimmy Snuggerud to come to St. Louis, because, I mean, one, you're talking about having so many people. It just sucks that they push the tournament back so much to where it falls like in the middle of this, to where it's like you're squeezing it in. You know, you'd think like maybe like a they wait so long from the end of the regular season in college hockey to start the playoffs that it feels like there's just that dead space and there's that build up to it that kind of dies off. But I guess in March, you're talking about March Madness and NCAA, so it's hard to combat with that at this point.
Could you imagine Minnesota's playing at Centene? Here's the pass to Snuggerud, big wind-up slap shot. He shoots, he scores! Donnie's in the bathroom.
And he would not wash his hands after that one.
It would, that might be one that I'm running out for.
I'll go back.
Somebody's got to have some hand sanitizer somewhere. Blues win last night. They beat the Calgary Flames, and I feel like with the team, you just kind of start to see the cream rise to the top. Hello, Jake Neighbors.
Heyo.
And it is just as disappointed as I am with how parts of this season has gone, I am equally as excited for parts of this future because of the play of somebody like Jake Neighbors. Yeah. He's friggin' incredible. How many of those goals that he has goddang scored this year has been in front of the goddang goal when he was getting murdered?
I have that stat for you.
Yeah, he does.
Thank you.
20 out of 26.
Boom!
Look at this guy.
You know what, guys? Now listen, it's almost like if you go to the dirty areas and do the dirty work,
that
there is a payoff for that from time to time.
So you mean when the puck is that close to the net, if you're standing there, then you have a better chance of scoring those goals? Is that what you're saying to me, Donnie?
I think that there are veterans on our team that can learn from what Jake Neighbors is doing.
I think there are rookies that could learn from Jake Neighbors, and I'm saying that because this kid is, what, 1.5 years into his NHL career?
Yeah.
And there are rookies that are looking, it's like, oh, hey, that's how this is supposed to work. I mean, I felt vindicated after that game last night because I've been clamoring to get Jake Neighbors on the top line with Robert Thomas all season long.
He really has. He only asked me about it on the Radio Hits on 101 about 5 weeks in a row.
I've been freaking tweeting about it. I've been whining about it. I'm sure if anybody's heard it, they're sick of me. But the reason I've been clamoring for it is because the way Jake Neighbors plays with Robert Thomas. Like, mm-hmm. Robert Thomas is an elite centerman. And if you don't believe me, check out the Athletic article that talked about it. But you tried Kyrou up there. You've tried Brandon Saad up there. It just all hasn't worked. And I've just felt like you look at it and you say, man, Jake Neighbors earlier this season, they played six games together, and Neighbors had four goals in that six-game span playing with Robert Thomas. He's a power forward. You put somebody else on that wing with him, ideally Pavel Buchnevich, and it felt like it was a line that would work out. And since Jake Neighbors was put up there, it started with Braden Shen, and then they just switched it to Buch. I mean, he's been consistently picking up goals. Not that he wasn't before, but it just, I want my best player with my best player. Mm-hmm. And right now it feels like those are the two guys I want together. Because next year, my hope is Jake Neighbors can be a 35-40 goal scorer, and that helps Robert Thomas get to the 100-point plateau if you're talking about those two guys playing together.
So, guys, how do you – so as far as these young players go, and as we kind of look into the crystal ball, how do you – you know, man, like – how do you appreciate the great season that Jake Neighbors has had and know that there's going to be some growth – But don't get yourself disappointed if he doesn't hit the 40 goal plateau, or you know what I'm saying? Like, how do we? What are we looking for as far as the growth goes when it comes to even a guy like Jake Neighbors? And then let's take it down a notch to Bolduc, to Dean.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, and I totally understand what Alex is saying. Like, Neighbors looks like he can be that type of player, and if he can score 30, 35, maybe one day 40, who knows? But I'll tell you what, I'd take 25, 27 from him next year for this reason. It's showing consistency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to have 25, 27 this year and then 14 next year.
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, well, maybe he's not the player that we thought he was. So he might not get to those lofty numbers, but if he can show some consistency and be a 25 to 30 goal scorer, I mean, that's better than the Blues even dreamed of, right? And so, yes, Donnie, we have had a lot of praise for Jake Neighbors, but last night, what a goal by Bolduc, and give Toropchenko equal credit on
absolutely.
That one. That pass, I mean, a lot of players can get into the zone, stop on a dime, and put a pass at center ice, but Toropchenko is a bottom six player.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people want to talk about, well, he can play second line. Yeah, listen, he's a bottom six player moving forward, a really good third line player, but he's got some offensive skill. And that pass was on the money to Bolduc, and Bolduc finished it. And you know what? When Bolduc scored that, I turned over to Alex and I said, you know, can you believe that people a year and a half ago were calling Bolduc a bust? I mean, this is a guy who's, what, 20, 21 years old, And you know, that's just how the world is these days. You know, this guy is a bust.
Immediately.
And then now he's finally getting some playing time, and we're starting to see it. So, you know, is Bull Duke going to be here in 4 years? Is he going to be a 30-goal scorer? Who knows? But you can see the skill as he gets more games. And I'll say this. It's not just neighbors. It's Bull Duke. It's Toropchenko. You know, we just talked about Snuggerud on the way. Dvorsky's going to be on the way. So
Matt Kessel's the other one, too.
Yeah, Matt Kessel's getting some time. So I do think, for as critical as we've been about the Blues this season, and I know we've done a little focusing on the future, you know, we're seeing it right now.
Yeah.
We saw it in that game last night.
And then when JR leaned over to me about Bull Duke, I leaned over to him and I said, could you believe someone in the last podcast said that, not like Bull Duke was going to make the difference of that Vegas game that the Blues played in?
He leaned over and I wasn't there. I was getting peanut M&Ms. Yeah.
And then he turned around and he said, wait, what happened? I was watching the Clemson game.
Yeah. All right, so guys, one of the things that we have talked about over the course of the year is whether or not this needs to be some kind of hard reset rebuild. There was an article yesterday. It's Frank Saravelli's.
Oh, yeah, on the Daily Faceoff. I read that one.
And so the gentleman pretty much is pushing for a Blues total rebuild, trading Parayko, trading Bennington, and then kind of, you know, resetting. And, guys, I understand the technical reason why that makes sense in air quotes, but to me, that makes no goddamn sense in the world.
Yeah.
I don't feel like this team with these young guys is as far off as maybe we... I want to temper this because it's not like I think that they are destined for like greatness next year. I just feel like this is, long story short, I don't feel like the full-on reset button needs to be hit. And if they trade Jordan Bennington, whoa, Lord, baby,
yeah.
I'm getting a pitchfork because I'm going to be pissed. That guy has kept us from being one of the worst teams in the league this year. You cannot let that guy go with as many question marks as you have going forward.
Yeah, I read that same article, and after I read, I read it, and then I said, he's giving no examples on how to fix this in the article. Like, all the article said was, the Blues aren't good enough to compete with these teams in the Central. They should sell off all of their pieces. Okay, but what? Like, if you were going to sell off Colton Parayko and Jordan Bennington, you should have done that before the trade deadline so you had a chance to get a really good pick. To do that after a season where you push for the playoffs makes absolute zero sense because Parayko showed signs of progress. Guys, Parayko is making $6.5 million right now for the next, 5-6 years? And what we've seen this season is a guy that if on the market, he's getting paid $8.5-$9 million. You don't trade Jordan Bennington. Now, I know there are some that probably look at this and say, well, Joel Hofer's looked good. Imagine what you could get for Jordan Bennington. Cool. It's an argument that you can have in the offseason, but to just blow it up for blow it up's sake, you're embarking on an 8-year turnaround. And like we've talked about this, Curbs and I were having this conversation yesterday before the broadcast because we brought it up on BK and Ferrario of like, does it turn into a rebuild and like how long do these rebuilds look at? And Curbs followed it up and said, when was the last successful rebuild? And the two teams that we said were Chicago and Colorado. That would be the two last successful rebuilds. But Chicago went from 1998 to 2007, making the playoffs once. And in that 8-year span, drafted third overall, first overall, had multiple picks that were 8th, 10th, 6th overall, and busted those picks. Never turned into anything. Sorry, I used the bust term there, JR. But they had success. Like, if you look at the Chicago Blackhawks' history in terms of that span of rebuild, they found Duncan Keith in the second round. They found a couple of pieces. Jalmerson was in the fourth round. They found Corey Crawford, Dustin Byfuglien. It took them 8 years of drafting depth guys and then selecting Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves and then bringing in Joel Quenneville to come out of that rebuild. Then the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, it was 7 years making the playoffs once, and that was that Patrick Roy year, drafting first overall, fourth overall, first overall, 10th overall when they got the McCarr, McKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen. If people want to really do that, if you feel like that's beneficial for the Blues, by all means. But understand what you're getting yourself into. The last successful rebuild was 8 years, and New Jersey is still... New Jersey might be selecting in the top 10 again this year. Like, Arizona is still in the middle of this thing right now. This doesn't just turn around fast and say, well, let's sell off these pieces and get good draft picks. It takes you a while.
Well, and also, too, and not to interrupt you, JR, but the Blues cannot afford to go 8 years without making the friggin' playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, that is that, financially, that would not. I mean, that is something that the team is going to need this playoff cash at some point here in the next couple of years in the future.
Yeah, you can't do it. And so a couple of things. Listen, I like Joel Hofer's future like anybody, but there's a difference between being the backup and stepping in and doing what he's doing and being the number one. And if you're the number one of a rebuild and you know it's not necessarily based on wins and losses, I get it. But, you know, it's not
That's also how you break a goalie, too, though.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, maybe a little bit apples and oranges, but I remember when Kevin Shattenkirk was the number two guy,
yeah,
and then Pietrangelo missed some time, and then Shattenkirk goes up and plays the top pair. You know, he just wasn't
the same
ready
guy
for that mm-hmm. yet. Wasn't you know same guy, yeah. And so when you have strength in numbers like that, having Binnington, and then allowing Hofer just to do what he's doing right now, it's the perfect growth pattern for him. Let me bring up another point, and this is something that the Athletic is working on. Right now, there should be a story coming out at some point. I think Mike Russo's got his hands on it. This is really interesting to me. If you said to me, hey, do you think you could get a really good return on Jordan Binnington? I'd say, yeah. There's some teams out there, some playoff teams, that I think would give you a pretty good return to give him Binnington. But what about this? It looks like the NHL goalie position is going the way of the NFL running back in terms of teams aren't going to put a lot of stock into one guy. You look at Ullmark in Boston, he was the Vezina guy, mm-hmm. Last year, a year before, yep. You know, and now they can't get rid of him. Let me give you some other names that are potentially available, you know, kind of reported to be available. Ullmark, Markstrom, Saros, Jari, I realize he's had some trouble, Gibson, Gustafson,
yeah.
Grubauer, you know, the list goes on here. We got names out the wazoo, and Binnington might be better than these guys, but our team's going to call you up and say, I'm going to give you this, this, and this for Binnington when there's seven other guys on the market. And whoever you pick up might be great this year and might not be.
Yeah, how often do goalies get traded that become awesome where they go to next? It's very rare that you see guys get traded that are number one somewhere and then go to another team and still be that number one.
So the cap is going up. Binnington's 6.5 doesn't look so bad anymore. He can help you through whatever you're going to call this in terms of the retool. Other players up front, skaters, let's just talk about the Bull Dukes, Neighbors, these guys can develop because you got a guy stopping the puck, right?
Mm-hmm. We talked about that last week.
So now you're in games, you know, it's not 6-0, you're losing, and now these guys can't even establish their game. So, you know, I guess all I'm saying is I can understand people saying, hey, this is a big deal in terms of how long it's going to take trade Binnington. You might not get what you want for him, and then you might have trouble, you know, keeping the puck
in all reality too. And maybe this is the I'm looking through my blue tinted glasses right now saying this, but it's really not. You're talking about a couple of tweaks. Like, to do what that person is saying on the Daily Faceoff article would be if you're the Arizona Coyotes and feeling like, well, this isn't going anywhere, or if you're Montreal, this isn't going anywhere, blow it up. You've got all of the elements. We just talked about Jake Neighbors being a potential 30-goal scorer next season. You've already got a number one elite centerman in Robert Thomas. You've got a number one defenseman in Colton Parayko. You've got a goaltending tandem that I believe next season could be talking about Jennings Trophy if they fix other areas. Like, I mapped this out yesterday because we were talking about it. I think if you make two tweaks to this team, if you find yourself a centerman who can get the best out of that second line so it puts other guys in better positions to exploit other teams' weaknesses. You're talking about putting a Snuggerud in. You're talking about using Kyrou on a second line if he's still on this team. If you re-sign Pavel Buchnevich, your forward group's looking a lot better if you just get that one piece. And if you find a defenseman to play with Colton Parayko, you find somebody to log 25, 27 minutes with Colton Parayko. And I'm not saying Nick Liddy hasn't done a good job of that, but I think you need an offensive defenseman to play with Colton Parayko to get the best out of that tandem. And how about dropping Nick Liddy down to a second pair to play with a Matt Kessel and having a Torey Krug on your third pair? Like, that is a good-looking team right there. To blow it up to me would say, well, you haven't had any success with your draft picks. The players you got right now that you're banking on are all terrible. You got to trade them away and start from scratch. And you're 5 freaking points out of a playoff spot right now. If I'm Arizona, I'm blowing it up again. If I'm the Blues, I can't blow it up. There's no point in blowing it up.
Yeah, see? That.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As I'm reading this, I'm thinking to myself that they're not bad enough. They're just really not. A couple things. Yesterday, I did an absolute deep dive on the NHL side of things on the Athletic site. If you feel bad about where the Blues are,
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
And you are just, this is terrible, Armstrong, whole thing, please do me the favor of reading the article about the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Aaron Portsline.
Boy,
awesome.
Oh boy, oh boy. I knew that it was bad, but then the thing about that situation is how stable that their front office has been. It's not like there's been all of these, you know, cooks in the kitchen sort of thing. But again, Blues fans, it could be way worse. This could be Arizona. We could be playing in a friggin' junior high goddamn ice rink for the love of friggin' Pete. And I honestly, I feel sorry for those players in that situation. That has got to suck. And I remember last year at the beginning of the year, there was this, well, every game is sold out. It's really loud in there. Yeah, it still sucks. All right? I appreciate you trying to make something out of nothing, but like that whole situation has got to get straightened out.
Yeah, a couple things. You know, Aaron Portsline wrote that story for The Athletic, and just one little nugget from it. You know, just kind of for people who didn't read it, you know, it goes back to the beginning of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And one little nugget I just got a chuckle out of was Doug McLean, who was the GM of the Blue Jackets at the time. He was asked by reporters, what about Ken Hitchcock? What if you hired Ken Hitchcock and brought him in? He goes, I'm not bringing that effing guy in here. And 2 days later, they're introducing Ken Hitchcock as the head coach of the Blue Jackets, and the owner points to Hitchcock and goes, that's the guy that's going to lead us out, completely bypassing what the GM thought about the situation. So that was nuts. And then I can't hear the Columbus Blue Jackets name without thinking about this story. Dan O'Neill, who used to cover the Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, great sports writer. You know, he's covered it all. I remember we were at practice one time, and he goes, I just can't. Oh, man, that cannon they have in Columbus where when they score a goal, you know, that cannon explodes and scares the hell out of you. I just hate that thing. And Ken Hitchcock is sitting right next to us. That's when he's coaching the Blues. And he goes, I found that cannon, and we bought it for the Blue Jackets, and we brought it in. You know, and so as Dan's telling the story about how he hates this thing, Ken's saying that he's the one behind.
I do remember the story of a hitch. I didn't know he said that with Dan next to him.
He brought it in. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because like the McLean said something to that reporter was like, "You think I'm gonna turn my young players over to him or whatever?" And then 2 days later,
God, if you're Doug McLean, you can't take answer. You can't take. Can't take questions from the reporter that asked you the question when you told him, I'm not bringing that effing guy, right? Like, you're like, yeah, I can't have you ask any questions at this press conference.
But also, too, and not to free plug it for The Athletic, and I did not read it yet, but Martin Brodeur, they had an interview there with the evolving goaltender position, kind of going back to what you were just saying a couple of minutes ago about how the position is changing. And the headline that I read was Martin saying that we're babying our goaltenders.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward. But I mean, there's just so much good stuff. And I've said this before, but like as a Bills fan, like I live for my Athletic coverage for the Bills. They really keep me plugged in because I'm not in the market. So if you are not an Athletic reader and a hockey lover, you got to check it out.
I noticed a trend, though. He named all the hockey stories that I didn't write.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't hear any JR stories on that one. Step your game up, JR. Stop worrying about the Clemson Arizona game, right?
So, see, I'm gonna feel bad about that. The rest
of
the
day. Yeah, you are.
I'm 100% because there was the article also on underrated centers that Robert Thomas was number one.
That was a good one.
So I'm sure you threw that one in there.
Yeah, JR had a piece of that one too. Yeah.
No, it for years it was a running joke. I'd come down to the Blues practice, and Mike Caruso, if he knew that I did not write it, he goes, "Dude, that was your best story today. That was amazing."
serious. Working around hockey people, Donnie, it is brutal. It is just, there is insults flying all the time, and I don't know how we survive.
You know, I wanted to ask you guys this a couple of weeks ago, and I don't mean to catch you off guard here with this, but I think one of the cooler things when you get involved in something like working with a team or in my situation where we get to work really closely with the people at venues. So like I get to be friends with, you know, people at the amphitheater and people at the pageant and things like that because we see them so mm-hmm. much. And they really are unsung in the work in which that they do that keeps these really amazing entertainment places up and running and moving. And a couple of weeks ago, there were a couple of gentlemen that retired after working at the Enterprise Center for a long time. And it made me think, I wonder who Alex and JR see on a game-to-game basis, somebody in that building that, I don't want to even say makes your job easier, but just somebody that you know that's just one of those sort of behind-the-scenes people that you look forward to seeing when you're going to the Enterprise
Center. Oh, man, I got a ton of them. Like, I take the same path in the Enterprise Center every single day. So there's two different security guards. Of course, when you walk through the security entrance, you get down to the elevator. It's the guy. So the guy that works down by the suite elevator when you go to the lower floor, he used to stand next to the opposition's bench when I was a booth assistant. And for people that don't know, like when I got into this, I was an intern for Curbs and Kelly Chase during the broadcast. So what I would do is I would be the assistant for them, and the time that I was doing it, what they had to do was they would always get a player from the opposition after the first period. They'd get a player from the Blues at the end of the second period, and then they'd get a player from the winning team after the third period. And so every game, home game, I would go down. First period, I would go to the other team side, and I would talk to the PR and get a player set up, and then we'd grab the player afterwards. And then I'd do the same for the Blues and then the winning team. So the security, I think his name is Bill, if I'm not mistaken. The security guard that is there, he was the one that would sit by the bench for the opposition. And so he would let me come up there and stand there behind the bench, and I would joke around with him all the time. He was an awesome dude. Fun fact, I actually grabbed Joe Vitale when he was playing with the Arizona Coyotes for an interview with Curbs. That's when awesome. I was a booth assistant, and then Joey, of course, gets the job. And then Anna on the suite elevators, I think for 9 years from me doing the booth assistant to now, I ride the suite elevator just because Anna is like one of the nicest individuals ever. And there are like five security guards up in the press box that are always walking around, that are always coming into the booth and talking with us. A couple of them bring us food every once in a while, which is always a nice thing. And then you've got Daniel that works in the food area for the press box. So, like, those are just the people that come to my mind that are always so incredible. Like, you just know the path into Enterprise Center, and, you know, you're talking to them, you're shooting the ish with them. It takes me, like, an hour to get to the press box by the time I get there because you're stopping by
That's
everybody.
That's the best, man.
I know,
That's
I love
the best.
It.
Alex likes that guy so much that he goes, I think his name is Bill.
I know. Well, we're not on a first-name basis. We're on a nickname basis, which I can't say on the
podcast. Because you see the same faces and, you know, kind of the handshake or fist bump. And, yeah, same thing. I mean, he mentions Anna. Anna, I try to say something. I'm not funny, but you try to say something funny to her because she's got the best laugh in the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then Daniel, too. And, you know, shocker, I know the food guy, right?
So, me too, man. Me too. but we know the food guy because we tell Daniel to put more food out for us.
Just a lot of people. And it's just so cool how they just enjoy their job. A lot of them, it's their second job, too, whether it's security or usher or whatever. And one of these days, I've told The Athletic this, and I don't think they're as excited about the story idea as I am, but I want to dress
Donnie
up
Donnie
like
might
a,
be.
Donnie, what do you think about this? Okay, so all seriousness.
Then maybe I'll give you credit for one of your articles.
Yeah. So when I throw this idea at you, I want you to say, yeah, I'd read that, or probably not because you wrote it.
Donnie's going to be like, nah, it sounds like a terrible idea.
But I want to dress up as an usher, right, and stand there and have my sign, you know, quiet, or what do they say?
Oh, yeah.
No applause.
Yeah, no applause or silence, please.
But and then just write a story about all the questions you get asked, the things that you see, you know, do you watch the game? Do you have to sit back? Like, just all the crazy stuff that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Life of an usher. I'm getting a vibe here that
Donnie, you and I need to buy tickets for his section and go start a brawl.
That'd be great.
Listen to me, all right? I know that this is crazy talk, what I'm about to say, but there are people that go to sporting events just for the fun of it, without really having an idea of what's going on as far as the play goes.
No.
flies in the face of kind of how I do things, but they do exist. They are there.
Yeah, they're on my Twitter account.
There's a lot of them on your Twitter account.
And I wonder how they sort of, you know, I think that would be part of that story that would be kind of cool. It's like somebody's getting up in the middle of a power play and you're wondering why. Well, because they don't care and they're going to get a beer, whatever the case may be.
Going to the bathroom again.
Right. Well, that would very
going
much
to
be
get made. More food.
And also, too, they just changed the light bulb outside of the studio.
Hey-o.
So I guess now that they can tell that when we're on the air, even though we've never had anybody walk in.
Good.
So I guess that's
got that red light.
I guess that's a thing. So, gentlemen, back to the Blues. And a few games left here in the season. The playoff race is what it is. I mean, I don't think that it's going to take a lot for us to get there. But I got to tell you, as far as the season has gone, through the roller coaster ride of everything, I'm not as low as I thought I would be a couple of weeks ago. I feel like I got a pretty good handle on how this is going to go going forward. One of the things I did want to ask, and this makes me realize, when you guys were talking earlier about a center to help that second line, a defenseman to accent Parayko, are the Blues going to have money to be able to do that in the offseason?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think if I'm not mistaken, according to Cap Friendly, like, if they don't re-sign any of their free agents, which I'm not really sure if any of them are going to get re-signed, because it's what, Scandella, Kapanen, Blay, and then the restricted free agent of Scott Perunovich. I think those are the only ones I'm thinking of.
Verana, but he's in the minors.
I think last time I looked at it, it said you're going to have $13 million.
Yeah, it's about 13, 14.
Yeah, something like that. And that's with the cap expected to rise. So, like, you're at about $13, $14 million before you make any moves. And if you're not re-signing any of those guys, you've got a couple of minor league pieces that will come in. You figure an entry-level contract will be the minimum of Snuggerud. You're probably talking about somewhere between $11 and $12 million prior to any moving pieces out or bringing pieces in.
You can do some damage with that.
No, you can. The only thing is, I remember, you know, conversation with Tom Stillman 4 or 5 years ago, and he said, you know, hey, we've spent to the cap. We're glad we spent to the cap. It's led to, you know, sustained success. But there's going to be a time where we just don't do that for good reason, like because we're not going to, you know, be a Stanley Cup contending team for a couple of years. And so, you know, you can have $13, $14 million. To me, it all, like, I, you know, you talk about following the Blues and covering the Blues, and, you know, you're up on everything the Blues do. Hey, listen, you can be a Blues insider, but you don't know what Doug Armstrong's thinking. You don't know what Tom Stillman's thinking in terms of next year. Yes, they want to be competitive during the retool, but that might not mean going out and getting the $8 million forward, you know, to play with Neighbors and Thomas.
Right.
You're right.
Or the second line center, or whomever. So, you know, if you had to, like, put me on the hand on the stove right now, I just don't think the Blues are going to spend to the cap next year, and I could be wrong about that, but I just think it's going to be a development period. If something makes sense, they might spend the money on it, but I just feel like, hey, hang on to that money. And that's one thing I want to point out here. A lot of people, oh, no, you got to go out and get this guy and be competitive. Well, guess what? When you go out and make that move and sign that guy in free agency and maybe overpay for that guy, guess what? In 2 years, when you're really set up to take that next step, or 3 years, now that money is spoken for with the guy who might not be producing anymore. And guess what? There's this attractive player who could really fit your, but no, you got this guy, you know, signed for $8 million for the next 6 years.
And I'm going to bring this up not because I'm throwing the, because we've talked about Torey Krug and how we feel like he's made a hell of a renaissance, and it feels like he's a player that should be part of this team. But to JR's point, go back to that offseason when you didn't re-sign Alex Pietrangelo, and everyone was like, well, you gotta sign somebody. Go sign Torey Krug. And you signed Torey Krug. 3 years later, people are saying, well, you got to get rid of Torey Krug.
Right.
So, like, sometimes it is reactionary, which isn't a good thing to do. And, I mean, I for one, feel like that they're going to spend something. But I am with JR. I don't think we're talking about, well, they got $12 million. They're going to spend $12 million. I still believe even with a $12 million cap space, it's money in, money out for the Blues. So if they're going to bring somebody in, they're going to have to trade somebody out that gets rid of some of that salary cap. Because they're, I just don't know if they view themselves as a salary cap team right now, because you're just not at the spot where you're competing with all of those teams. You're at the spot where maybe you bring in a $4 million player for a couple of years because you feel like he's a good accent piece to this team, But to do that, let's ship out somebody who's making $4.5, $5, $6 million, and it offsets itself, so we have that money to work with.
And I am not, I want to make this clear, and I hope nobody just clips this one part of the soundbite. I am not saying that the Blues are
going
to do something like this, but it might not be a situation where, okay, they've got 12 or 13 and they decide to spend it or not spend it. It might be a situation, and I'm just going to use this player as an example. What if you say, I want to trade Justin Falk, and you deem it valuable moving forward to move his salary off the books, right? And you're okay with Matt Kessel playing second pair, top four, you know, in Falk's spot next year. It might be a situation, okay, is anybody interested in Falk? Yeah, we could be. You know, what are you going to – how's this going to work out? Well, the other team says, well, we want an asset to go with Falk. You know, we like Falk, but, you know, if you take his contract, we're going to take somebody. Then the Blues have to give up a pick or a prospect. And I'm not saying, you know, it's Bull Duke. I don't know who it is. But it could be a situation where the Blues get rid of some cap, stay young, keep gearing towards the future, but they were able to unload one of those big contracts, whether it's Falk, Krug, or whoever. Keep that part of the soundbite on there.
I do think a lot of that offseason is going to, what, depending on what path they go, is going to come down to the decision on the coach.
Yeah.
Like I really think that if Doug feels like, you know what, Bannister's done a really good job and he deserves an opportunity to see this through, I feel like you're going to stick young and you're going to stick with a lot of these guys and maybe try and lean more towards like, hey, let's put these youth into this position to have some success and see where it goes. But if Doug decides to go maybe with somebody who has experience under their belt at the NHL level, to me, that signifies that they feel like they can win sooner rather than later, and they wanted to take that next step with the coach, and they said, now we've got that, let's put the pieces around it. And I'm not trying to take any shots at Drew Bannister. We talked about Chicago earlier. Like, Chicago was in that rebuilding situation, and then when they felt like, hey, we've got Patrick Kane, we've got Jonathan Toews, we've got all of these other pieces, now let's get the coach and put us in the position to succeed right now. I really do feel like the coaching decision is going to tell a lot of people which direction this Blues team is going to be going next season.
Guys, how long do you think that it'll be after the regular season is over that we find out about the head coach? Or do you think it'll be not until after?
I think it's going to be after the playoffs.
After the finals and all that stuff.
I mean, I got to, unless they're set on Drew Bannister being the coach, which is very possible, that I would imagine you announce right away because you take all the questions away. But going back to that press conference with Doug where he said, like, he's going to do his due diligence and he's going to answer that question once the next coach is hired, I got to imagine he's going to wait to see the teams that drop out of the playoffs, because typically in that first round, when teams don't match their or reach their potential, that's where those coaches get fired. And, I mean, you could be talking about some bigger names that could be available, and depending on what the market looks like with names that could be out there. So I would imagine it's going to be deep into the playoff race before they announce something.
Your gut tells you right now, will Drew Bannister be the head coach of the Blues next year?
So it's funny because as soon as we wrap up here, I have to go work on a mailbag, and the headline is, does Drew Bannister have a shot to keep the job?
You going
to
read that one, Donnie?
I will. I read all of JR's articles. I just never bring them up, I guess.
And honestly, like, I got back home from the game last night and lay in bed knowing that I had this story to write today. It's like, gosh, how am I going to address this? You know, how do I feel about it? How, you know, and you just don't know what Doug's going to do, because obviously he's put out phone calls and feelers and tried to see who's available. And maybe there's some guys you don't know if they're available yet. And so, yeah, I mean, you say gut, I realize you got to get to the point here in terms of what do you think?
No, tap dance.
Yeah.
It's all right.
How long did I tap dance for you?
It was actually really impressive.
Big guy tap dancing. I think that if I had to put a percentage on it, I would think that it's a 60 or 70% Doug's going to find somebody else.
Yeah.
But I think, like Alex said, if the Blues decide, hey, look, you know, they played hard down the stretch, there was development with the young guys, you know, Drew is familiar with these guys, so you don't need to bring in an outside guy, then it could be Drew. And listen, when I say 70% he brings in somebody else, that is zero disrespect to Drew. He's done a phenomenal job.
He'll get a job as an assistant coach in the, like, he will not go back to the American Hockey League after this season. I can almost put a 100% on that. Like, I don't think it would be with the Blues if they went with somebody else, but he will be on a NHL bench next season because I mean, he's proven it with this team. Like, you had Craig Berube and it wasn't working. He comes in and he got them into a playoff conversation. And if you make the playoffs, I would almost guarantee an NHL team brings him in as an assistant coach if the Blues don't keep him as head coach.
So if I write that story, will you read it out?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely I will. I mean, my gut...
You got one buddy in here.
Yeah, one guy's going to read it, I promise. I have an alert set on my phone. I don't know if Donnie does this, but anytime you tweet, it pops up on my phone. Donnie, do you have that?
No, I don't. I don't have that for anybody. I
doesn't even like either of us. Did JR... Here's the, if you were to tell me, though...
This is taking a dark turn.
It did, didn't it? If you were to tell me Drew Bannister or the field, like, as a betting person, I would go with the field because I just think there's more names out there, and it just feels like that is the way you're going to pursue it. But on the other side of it, I do believe they view this as a little bit more time before they're ready to start entering that winning window. And if that's the case... I think you want to take a chance with Drew Bannister. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I really think the off-season decisions and the coach are, to me, intertwined. And I might be completely off on this. This could just be my conspiracy theories. But if Bannister is here, to me, that tells me that they're going to have a very similar roster next season because they feel like Bannister got the best of it. One full season with younger players can get them to the next level, and then they'll reassess. But if they say, no, there's a coach out there that we want to pursue and we feel like he can get us there, I feel like that offseason signifies there's going to be some major wheeling and dealing or signings to get this team kind of 2019 offseason-esque to where they said, no, we're ready to compete. Let's go make some moves and make this team a competitor.
Bill the Usher told him that. He's just repeating.
Bill did. You know what's going to happen? This son of a nutcracker, I'm going to see him. JR and I are going to be walking into the stadium, and JR's going to walk past every security guard and go, hey, Alex, is that Bill? And he's not going to his name be Bill, and I'm going to be so pissed off at myself.
God, I would love to see that myself. All right, well, gentlemen, here's what we got. We got San Jose tomorrow night. Clem Costin will be back in
Clem
town.
Clem Shady.
Love you, Jeff.
I'm gonna be thinking about that the whole game.
I hope the Blues win. I hope that Costin gets a couple. And I bet you that if he scores, there will be people cheering because of Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know that they were there. He had fans here, Costin himself. But I bet you that there'll be a couple people that would hear the name and go, hey, our guy!
Clem Shady! I'm going to tell Curbs to call him Clem Shady on the broadcast if he scores.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. As always, Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN, Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic, whose articles I apparently do not ever
read. Doesn't even read them.
For our homie, Jamie Rivers, who is out and about, and Jeff Burton, who we miss so much. It's the Last Minute Blues Podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and let's go Blues!
The Last Minute Blues Podcast. Hear more at 1057thepoint.com.